You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
All right, welcome on into Dana and Parks. Ha ha! It is Tuesday. It is Tuesday, the 23rd of June.
Time for some more terrible jokes later this afternoon. What do you think?
Would agree. Would we put this up for a vote? I think we should. Daniel?
Yeah.
I believe it's Daniel.
I.
Yes. Sam?
The other option would be nigh, but I choose I.
Screw nigh, I'm I. It is also the week. We are T-minus about 48 hours before the Netherlands take the pitch. They are already here. And Dan, you got yourself a shirt today. And one of the things I said ahead of this, because you said FanFest is open tomorrow. There's going to be a huge crowd on Thursday for Tunisia versus the Netherlands. It is 6 p.m. And I said to Sam in the newsroom, we need to start really having a conversation at the top of the 2 p.m. hour about our guests that are joining us in town. And specifically, I want to know some fun facts about each country. And Dan, first, I want you to tell everyone about your t-shirt that you got today, because it's amazing.
Oh, yeah. I needed to get an Oranje t-shirt, an orange t-shirt.
Oranje.
Yeah. And so I went to the local store that has the big KC heart in the middle, and it's an orange shirt with the blue, white, and red heart with KC.
You can say Charlie Hustle.
No, it is absolutely Charlie Hustle. They've got a whole repertoire of these things.
Algerian shirt from them as well.
Yeah. Very popular in Lawrence. Really quick, if you're curious, this orange army that's going to be everywhere. Orange is the national color of the Netherlands because of its ties to the Dutch royal family. It all began with William of Orange, also known as William the Silent, who became the symbol of Dutch independence during the 80 Years' War against the Spanish rule.
Yeah.
So there you have it.
They led the Dutch revolt against the Spanish.
His name was William of Orange.
I've got 10 fun facts about the Netherlands.
Lay it on me.
Did you know that they are home to the tallest people on Earth? The average adult male stands at, you want to guess?
6'2".
6 foot tall even, which I think is 3 or 4 inches over the United States. The average woman, 5'7". Wow. Netherlands is home to more bicycles than human beings.
Wow.
There are roughly 23 million bicycles in the Netherlands, but only about 18 million residents.
Wow.
That means there's 1.3 bikes per person. The country is stitched together by more than 22,000 miles of dedicated cycling paths. A quarter of the country is below sea level.
Okay.
26% sits below sea level. Of course, they invented the color orange. We already talked about that. They have the world's oldest national anthem. Care to guess when it was established?
I'm going to say 1570.
Whoa.
Shut up.
Are you being for real?
Shut up. I'm being absolutely real. I just picked that number.
1572.
No way. Oh, I need to go on Jeopardy, said no one ever.
The William or Het Wilhelmus.
Okay.
I apologize to anybody in the Orange Army for my pronunciation of that. The world's biggest flower garden happens to be in the Netherlands.
I think I did know that.
7 million flower bulbs.
Yeah, that's where the tulips come from.
Yep.
King Willem Alexander is a part-time pilot. Thank you, Gemini. Didn't need that one. It's the land of more than 1,000 windmills. There you go.
And it's a constitutional monarchy. And the Netherlands, the country in Europe, is just one of the territories that they hold. There's like 12 others.
Two more. They created the first stock market in 1602.
Wow.
The Amsterdam Stock Exchange. And last but not least, birthday calendars belong in the toilet from Gemini. If you visit a Dutch home, you will almost certainly find I'm not even going to try to pronounce that, birthday calendar hanging in the restroom, with its national tradition to keep track of everyone's birthdays there, ensuring that you never forget a date while taking care of business.
When you're in the bathroom? Oh, my.
Well, it's better than keeping track of.
Yeah, that is accurate, Daniel. That is accurate.
There you go.
Thank you. And thank you. It's going to be a fun week, and I was not planning on going down on Thursday, and then I talked to a girlfriend of mine today, and she goes, you got to do it. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know what? You're right. Let's absolutely do this. One of my favorite soccer-adjacent stories, and we missed this week and a half ago, but the New York Times just picked it up. Have you heard of the Overland Park grandmother who put her pool table on Facebook Marketplace? She was just selling it. Like,
as we one all, does. Yeah.
We all do. Like,
somebody come haul this away.
There are a few things that are tough to get rid of. Pool tables, grand pianos. Like, you can just think of the things on the marketplace where there's 50 of them because no one wants to haul it out of there. So they wanted to get rid of their pool table. They put it on the marketplace. And lo and behold, someone reaches out and says, hey, we want that. We need that. Can we come get it? We're the England soccer team.
Huh.
And apparently, you know, our England friends are staying in Prairie Village.
Yeah, the base camp here.
Apparently, they were promised like a pool table. And for whatever reason, at the hotel over there, they don't have a pool table. So very quickly, their go team was like, well, we got to come up with a pool table. They ended up connecting with this sweet grandma in Overland Park.
I love it.
Here's the greatest part of the story. There is a photo on the front of the New York Times of this mature woman with all of these like six or seven huge beefy dudes that came and just hauled this thing out of her house. They had asked $700 for it. Pretty fair.
Yeah.
But there's a line in there that said her husband wondered if they could actually trade. Like, how about we give you a pool table and we get to come see some of the game? And or I don't, right?
A signed jersey from Harry Kane. That'd
or
be pretty
something.
Cool.
Like, I don't even know, but how cool is that?
That's, get me some English swag.
I wouldn't have believed it. If somebody said to me, you know, this, well, you would kind of know because they would have the British accent.
Also,
you
know, maybe they shouldn't ask for some English swag because they were the team that got their swag stolen.
Right.
Then
but that did not, hey, that did yeah. not happen yeah. here.
That's true. That's true.
When I first saw that headline, I was like, damn it, did that happen here? No, it did not.
This is one of the beautiful things about what is happening here, because this is such a local little thing.
Yeah.
This local woman trying to sell a pool table, and all of a sudden, here's the England national team. They want to play billiards. So...
And all of a sudden, here's the New York Times, and we are on the front page. They are calling us the soccer capital with respect to all of the various places they are playing these things of the world.
Mm-hmm.
There are people saying Kansas City is the epicenter of this thing. So even if you're not paying attention to the games, have pride for that. And then, Sam, do you have the letter that one of our listeners wrote?
Yeah.
I would like you to read it. We so rarely open mail here, but today I did. I thought, you know what? I'm going to do it. I'm going to open mail.
And she didn't even make me open
and
it,
I did
assuming it was full of poison.
Yes, and I did it. And we've even more rare that we will read something on the air, but I thought this was so lovely and it's going to be so helpful to us. First, tell everyone what it is, Sam.
So
it's
what not they from prison, sent, is it? What they sent was a rolled up World Cup bracket poster. So it is the entire World Cup bracket, including the group stages. And then, of course, it's got round of 32 that you can fill in with the teams that make it and follow it along through that. And the letter from Carter in Belton, thank you, Carter, starts out, hi, Dana, Parks, and Sam, and Scott when he's back in action. As a longtime listener, I've learned a few things over the years. One, Parks will argue with a stop sign. Two, Sam is the only adult supervision in the room. And three, Dana and sports go together about as well as the Chiefs and a neutral zone infraction. So with the 2026 World Cup coming up, I decided to help out. I picked up a giant graphic World Cup match schedule poster, the kind that even Dana can follow without needing a flow chart or a translator. You can hang it on the studio wall and update it each day as the tournament rolls along. Heck, you can even post it on the KMBZ website so listeners can follow along and pretend we're all organized. When I bought it, I actually thought Scott would really get a kick out of it. Since he's on the mend, maybe you can present it to him when he returns. A little welcome back. Something he can hang on his wall as a souvenir or as proof that someone out there believes that he can keep track of 104 soccer matches. Thanks for keeping the afternoons entertaining. You all make Kansas City radio a lot more fun, even when Dana is trying to pronounce soccer player names. Signed, Carter.
Thanks, Carter in Belton. Thank you so much. We are going to hang that here in the studio. I'm going to have Sam fill it out because, you know, the bracket's already started. But it is a bracket just like you would see during March Madness. And it is just as easy to follow along once you start seeing the teams as they advance. And so that is so helpful and so useful. And it put a big old smile on my face. Thank you for that. We have one dumb story of the day, and then we're going to get to a pretty serious story of the day. And then I really want you guys to stick around in the 3 o'clock hour. I have been trying to get the brand new Kansas City professional softball team to come onto the program.
KC Diamonds, baby.
We could not get the entirety of the team to come on the program because turns out after their very successful homestand, the very first one here ever in Kansas City, they are now on the road playing their second series of games. So we did the best we could. We have their catcher calling in the 3 o'clock hour. We have some of the ownership coming into the studio, and we are going to talk all things Kansas City Diamonds. They almost sold out that first game, and they were, I think, 3-1 in that inaugural homestand. I cannot wait to go to one of those games. If you think you are having a bad day, we're going to talk about a man that was just rescued after falling into a non-flushing toilet. You might be asking yourself,
well, that's going to stink.
Why does one go into a non-flushing toilet? What is a non-flushing toilet? And you might be wondering, what, pray tell, did he drop that was so important? He went in to all of that sewage to retrieve it. And I'm going to tell you right now, it's not what you think. It's not what you think it is. We'll tell you when we come back, and then on to the update in the Butler plane crash this hour on Dana and Parks. We're back after this. So this must be one of the dumbest stories I've ever heard in my entire life, because we've talked about someone going into a toilet to retrieve a cell phone. I would never do it. I'd never heard of the term non-flushing toilet. I don't even know what that is.
Is it a portable toilet?
A man fell into a, quote, non-flushing toilet.
Mm.
Then he got stuck, prompting a multiple agency rescue. Happened in Central California, where the man fell into the depths of a camp toilet.
Oh, okay.
Do you know what this is?
It could be like a compost toilet. So a lot of these camps that try to cut down on environmental impact will effectively dig a giant hole, think like an outhouse, and put a toilet seat on top of it. And then there's a bucket of mulch right next to it. And once you're done with your business,
okay,
you cover
I'm
your business
throw
with
up.
Mulch.
So, yeah. So picture a latrine, mm-hmm. a hole in the ground, or a porta potty, but worse.
Right.
What would you possibly try to lower yourself down to retrieve? The answer for me is nothing.
No.
Nothing.
No.
If your toddler fell in there, you would call 911 and do everything to grab them, of course. But I mean like an inanimate object.
When I go up to the UP to hang out at my buddy's property, there are no indoor toilets. Your only option is an outhouse. The hole is probably 10 feet deep. And I've had that thought of, if I drop my phone in here, I'm just going to have to drive home with no phone,
right?
Because I'm not going down in there.
My God, you vacation weird.
It's fun. I like it.
All right. So he was in there stuck 15 minutes before he was rescued. He was decontaminated after it happened, and they say he was not seriously injured. He fell in, not trying to retrieve a cell phone.
Okay.
Not trying to retrieve a wad of thousands of dollars.
It would have to be like 10 grand for me, yeah.
Sam, his sunglasses.
Oh, no.
I mean, if you said to me you dropped a $25,000 Rolex down there, I would still call for help. Grab a fishing pole with a lure on it and try to retrieve the item.
It's not like it's going anywhere.
Call out for assistance went out Saturday around 2:30 in the afternoon. They called it a, quote, confined space rescue.
So, yeah, essentially, let's paint the picture here. He went in headfirst, arms and all, hole of a toilet. The reason he got stuck was because his belly and his hips were too big to go all the way down. Otherwise, he would have been all the way down in the septic tank.
Got it. It's unclear whether he was able to find his sunglasses. Look, I don't care what kind of sunglasses you own. Like, Oakleys or Ray-Bans. Like,
heck, they could be those new $2,200 smart snap glasses that they're talking about. No.
Mm-mm. Not up in here.
No.
That's our dum-dum of the day. And now we move on to Butler. There's been a lot of speculation about what happened during that devastating crash that killed 12 people this month. Listen to this from the Kansas City Star. You knew something was not going to be right here. We still don't completely know what it was, but we're getting a clearer picture, I think.
It's not every day that a plane goes down and all 12 people on board perish.
The plane crash that killed 12 people this month in Butler, Missouri, was the second major incident in a year in the Kansas City region involving an aircraft used by Skydive Kansas City, where engine trouble was suspected. I'm going to say that again. The plane crash that killed 12 was the second major incident in a year in our region involving an aircraft used by Skydive Kansas City.
I didn't know that the other one was in connection to Skydive KC.
I didn't either, but we're going to get into it. Hours after the plane went down June 14th, a former Department of Transportation Inspector General told the Kansas City Star, well, my first guess is there's a problem with the engine. Last year, after a plane crash landed June 16th, almost exactly a year to the date, on the roof of a Johnson County Airport hangar, authorities said the pilot had lost control and suspected mechanical failure.
That was a Beechcraft aircraft.
Okay. Though the plane was headed for routine repairs and not on a skydiving operation, sources say that Skydive Kansas City had also been using that aircraft during that time frame. Now, we know this. It could be up to 2 years before the National Transportation Safety Board issues its final report. But even in other major air disasters, we start to hear rumblings of when there's something amiss.
Maybe
planes do not want to fall out of the sky.
Maybe they were not performing the daily maintenance that they needed to be performing. We have no idea. But to your point,
God,
I've heard this from many pilots, some of them career pilots for a very long time. Planes are hard to crash.
So to have two, you know, and I think the pilot survived on the crash into the hangar within almost exactly one calendar year with planes operated by the same company. If nothing, it raises eyebrows. We know this. 11 skydivers and the pilot were killed this past June 14th, right after takeoff. It was a Pacific Aerospace 750 XL, popular model for skydiving, that was not able to make it to full power. It was turning left when it stalled near I-49, and it was the aircraft's third flight that morning. And I have said this, we talked about this at home. Sam, can you imagine the group of skydivers that went just prior?
On the previous jump trip.
And then the group of skydivers that went prior to that. There's going to be a whole group of people out there, probably from the Kansas City area, that were on this plane in the morning, and then on this plane, what, 2 hours later? Yeah. Before that thing went down. Skydive Kansas City, by the way, did not respond to a request for comment.
Despite the fact that they had nothing to do with the tragedy, a number of those people are asking themselves today, why me? Why did I get the flight that worked?
One of the things I want to talk about is that the National Transportation Safety Board years ago, after a deadly skydiving plane crash in, I believe, Hawaii, one of the board members, a female, spoke up and said, we're done. We have got to rein in the skydiving operations because up to that point, the deadly Hawaii crash, there wasn't a lot of oversight. There just wasn't. They are somehow carved out. There's a carve out for skydiving planes where planes doing other operations, even the exact same kind of plane, would have to prove it is airworthy. There would be safety checks. There would be all of these things. And for some reason, in the law, there's an exception for skydiving planes. And when the Hawaii crash happened, this woman said, look, this is something that we have to address or this is going to keep happening. That woman who brought this up after the Hawaii crash is now the head of the NTSB. Mm. So regardless of what this final report shows,
expect some changes.
I guarantee you there are changes coming. She is the one that sounded the alarm the last time. And this was in Butler, the deadliest skydiving plane incident since Hawaii.
Right.
She was the one that sounded the alarm then. I guarantee you now that she is the head of the NTSB, we are going to see changes.
And what is the pushback in increasing the requirements for
these? I don't know.
I get it that they're semi-commercial. You know, they're not putting 67 or more people like a regional commercial airliner onto it. And they're only flying from the same airport to the same airport. But it's still, you're taking people up, you're putting lives at risk. And now we've seen the deadliest skydiving crash since Hawaii right here in the Kansas City metro.
I think, and I'm going to ask you guys, are there other types of attractions where we're all just living in this world where we assume everything is okay and we assume there's checks and balances, and sometimes, quite frankly, there's not. There's probably a lot of paperwork you have to sign to jump out of an airplane. I've never done it. I would never, ever, ever do it. I guarantee you there's a legal waiver saying, you know, we're not going to sue if something happens. This is an inherently dangerous activity. But I do think the public has a reasonable expectation that when you get up into an airplane, that airplane is safe. 913-586-7798. We'll take your thoughts on that straight ahead. You're listening to Dana and Parks. Phone number is 913-586-7798 if you'd like to weigh in. We also have learned that this particular skydiving plane, according to the Kansas City Star, arrived in Butler just 12 days before the crash. Just 12 days.
Is that to mean that they had not regularly been using this for their skydiving trips and it was a new addition to the fleet?
It says a plane that Skydive Kansas City had previously used was sent on May 6th to a sister drop zone out of state. And another one, the Pacific Aerospace 750XL, had been brought to Missouri about a month later. That plane, which is the one that crashed, was embarking on just its 13th. Oh my God, it was the 13th flight. The 13th flight. For Skydive Kansas City out of Butler.
And the wives of one of the victims has already filed suit against the company.
Yes.
Hiring the same law firm used by the widow of Kobe Bryant.
Yeah, they are known for handling air disaster cases.
Or what?
Go to John in St. Joe. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Hey, babe. Check this out. You know what it all boils down to. Everybody's not doing their job no more. It's not like the old-fashioned days. They don't start it up every time they get ready to run. Make sure it sounds good. I mean, like old mechanics say, oh, yeah, that sound right there. Oh, I don't know about that sound. But, you know, if that's the way everybody's playing these days, you know, inconsistent, not even following through, I think the days of safe flying is over.
Well, John, I will say this. I feel incredibly safe when I'm flying, even when I fly with my friend Janae, who, by the way, that race starts this week. Yeah. Remind me, we'll have to get into that later. I have never felt safer, but that is her plane that she has taken thousands and thousands and thousands of miles. What we know about the pilot, I think he was like 69 years old. The guy has thousands and thousands of hours of piloting experience. Well, this wasn't some 25-year-old that they just plopped down and said, here, take up a skydiving plane. But this plane would not have been familiar necessarily to him in the way that if you are piloting your plane, it would be.
If it were engine failure, if it were some sort of catastrophic mechanical failure, there's absolutely nothing the pilot can do from a takeoff perspective to get out of that. We've seen the comment, you know, it is what it is. They all had parachutes on. Why didn't they pull their chutes?
There's
no
way.
They were not high enough in the sky.
No.
The plane tried to take off. It could not take off.
Nosedived, down it went.
This is what happened. It's usually not having to do with anything that the pilot did, except for a rare number of cases. And to John's point, statistically, you are much safer getting in a plane than you are getting in a car.
The plane that crashed apparently was from Chattanooga Skydiving Company. Records show its first flight in Butler was June 5th. The Aviation Safety Network says the plane had been used for skydiving operations in other parts of the country. It arrived in Butler June 2nd. It had arrived from the Chicago area and had not had any scheduled flights for nearly a month when it arrived in Butler. So it had been dormant a month. Then it comes here. Quoting here from the Bates County Emergency Management Director, they move planes around. They lease them all over the place. They have different opportunities. They might change planes, try different things out. It is not unusual for skydiving planes to be moved to different locations. And I'm quoting here, he says, like it happens all the time. Crash was June 14th. It had only been in Butler since June 2nd. I feel like people are in two camps. You are either an adventuresome person and you, at the drop of a hat, will go. You will go skydiving. I'm in. You will go bungee jumping. You will do all of the adrenaline things. Or you're like me, and if it's something that's going, for me, I don't think the return on investment for the exhilaration is enough for me for the danger that is involved.
I've been bungee jumping 7 times. I would do it again. I signed up to skydive in Southern California when I was out there one summer, and I chickened out at the 48-hour cancellation.
But I think, Sam, the people who love this activity,
yeah,
this is not going to stop them from doing it. Now, I don't know what's going to happen with Skydive Kansas City. The you can't book online right now, obviously. Obviously.
From the text line, as an airline pilot, flying is extremely safe. Engine failure right after takeoff. Should have just landed it straight ahead as on any flat ground that you can find. Just speculation here. It sounds like he tried to make it to the highway that was a little bit to the left on the departure end, and he probably got slow and stalled the aircraft and lost control. Also from the text line, my sister-in-law's dad was on jump one and jump two that morning.
God.
He was set to be on jump three, but got bumped for another diver.
So listen to this. The plane was on its third flight the morning of June 15th. FlightAware shows that it had completed short flights from 9:20 in the morning to 9:42. That was flight number one. 9:20 to 9:42. It went back up from 10:30 to 10:50. And it was the third flight that it went down. And I have often wondered if there's anyone out there listening in Kansas City that would have been on that third plane. Or went on the first ride up or the second ride up, and how you even begin to process that, because I don't know. 913-586-7798. Let's go to Serena in North Kansas City. Go ahead.
Hey, Dana.
Hi.
I'm still shocked by all of this. I have been skydiving with that company, and I never even thought about the plane. I mean, it just didn't even cross my mind. You know, you're too busy thinking about, oh, I'm going to jump out of a plane at 14,000 feet.
Right.
And so then for that to happen, I mean, in a very sad, tragic way, it was very ironic to me that that's what happened.
Would you do it again, Serena?
You know, I always said yes, and my youngest daughter has wanted to skydive, and I said, you know, anytime, I'll do it again with you. This certainly gives me pause. I don't know if I would. I mean, I'm nearing 60 years old anyway, but I mean, I loved it. It was an amazing experience, and I'm glad I did it. I have also bungee jumped, so I'm one of those, a little bit of an adrenaline junkie, but I don't know. It definitely makes me think twice.
Thank you for the call and for being honest, Serena. I do appreciate it. The company that we're talking about has been registered with the Missouri Secretary of State since 2011. This was not their first rodeo. But if you ask me, if you were going to skydive, would you feel safer with some sort of FAA or NTSB oversight with respect to the aircraft? They already have oversight with respect to the parachutes and like how they are packaged and how, yeah. like, which is a critically important part of your experience. But would you not feel a little bit safer with oversight over the planes? And I think everyone listening would say, of course.
Well, and to be clear,
we would feel better.
There are regulations that these types of companies have to follow. They are just not nearly as stringent as
Correct.
A company that's going to be taking 67 passengers yeah. halfway across the country.
We'll keep an eye on it, but I guarantee you, mark this down in ink, changes are coming to skydiving operations because of this latest crash. 913-586-7798. Back with much more on Dana and Parks right after this. Wrap up this conversation before we get to the top of the hour and welcome in our guests in the 3 p.m. hour. Go find this on podcast if you're listening later. We are so excited to have a group in studio to talk about the Kansas City Diamonds, our brand new professional softball team right here in Kansas City, and we hope that you support those women. Let's go to John in Independence. Hi, John.
Hey, how are you?
Good. Go ahead.
My son-in-law and my two grandsons, all three of them are pilots. They own their own plane, and they have to have that plane inspected. Actually, they just put a new engine in it and put new front landing gear on it. And I don't think how they can get away without flying that plane, without going, especially what they're doing, without some kind of inspection. So usually that's what they do. I just can't believe that plane just went flying up in the air without them checking it out, considering the kind of business they're in. Because even, like I say, these private pilots check their planes
yeah.
out because they don't want them coming down.
So, John, it's a great question, and I looked up the exemption so I could give you more specific information. Skydiving planes are inspected, but they are subject to much looser FAA regulations than charter flights or commercial airlines. It is called Part 91 of the FAA rules, where drop planes escape the stricter scrutiny of the Part 135 charter rules, resulting in fewer required maintenance checks and weaker safety oversight. That Part 91 is the exemption that we are talking about. And for some reason, someone decided a long time ago that they are going to treat these skydiving planes essentially as private recreational flights,
yeah.
even though there are paying members of the public, I would say the unsuspecting public, customers on board.
So Part 91 runs consistent with the inspections that John was talking about for a personal aircraft. It's just annual, so every 12 months, or once you hit 100 flight hours.
The exemption means the skydiving planes are not subject to continuous, rigorous safety management systems and heavy oversight required of air taxis, airlines, or those charter flights. And it stunned us to learn that.
Yeah.
But it also sort of makes sense after the Hawaii crash and after what we've seen in Butler. This is why I'm saying changes are coming.
Story we've been following out of Texas Tech. Their quarterback went to rehab for a gambling addiction.
$95,000, yep.
Getting caught betting on his own team when he was playing for Cincinnati and Indiana. He transferred to Texas Tech. A judge ruled that Texas Tech could in no way get in the way of Brendan Sorsby playing in the 2026 season. All of the leagues disagreed. So we told you last week that Brendan Sorsby had then declared for the NFL supplemental
yeah,
draft.
He said, screw it, I'll just go to the NFL.
We now have an update from ESPN. Quarterback Brendan Sorsby will not be playing in the NFL in 2026 as the league has elected not to hold a supplemental draft.
Oh.
The NFL's decision came down to its right to decide whether to hold a supplemental draft or not per the collective bargaining agreement. As league officials said, they believed it would ultimately become a distraction to teams as they begin training camps.
So supplemental draft that they were going to do overall, not specifically for Sorsby, and they just decided not to do. I mean, Sorsby would have been involved, but so would other players.
It would have been specifically for him. It's triggered by a certain number of high-value players that want to enter the draft pool after the draft.
Well, that's awkward now, because what does he do? Go back and say, about that draft thing.
An NFL source told ESPN, quote, his application carries a lot of issues. The core of it, integrity of the game.
Yeah.
Sorsby admitted again to betting thousands of times on college and pro sports.
He also asked for help. He also asked for help.
He placed more than 40 wagers on the Indiana football team while he was a player on the team. So Sorsby will not be playing football in the 2026-27
season. But will he be playing for Tech? I don't think we know. It's bouncing back and forth between lawyers.
Well, once he declared for the supplemental draft, I think that took his eligibility away. So he's on his butt for the next year.
And then this ESPN analyst, Matt Miller. If you don't know the name, look him up. I think you'll know his face. Had a horribly serious car crash. They're saying in Missouri, and I'm trying to figure out where. Had to have his arm amputated. And he writes, "I am incredibly fortunate to even be writing this." ESPN's NFL draft analyst Matt Miller revealed that he was recently in a severe car accident in Missouri and had a life-saving amputation of his left arm. He says, "Last week, I was involved in a serious car accident in Missouri, airlifted to the hospital. I am deeply grateful for the exceptional care that I have received from the first responders to the doctors, nurses, medical staff. I am incredibly fortunate to be writing this. As a result of the accident, I sustained significant injuries, including multiple fractures and broken ribs. I also underwent a life-saving amputation of my left arm." According to local news site KOAM, is that Springfield? Help me out there, Sam.
Text line says it was down by Joplin.
My goodness. Miller's car crossed the center line and struck a semi last Wednesday. He says, "I have a long road ahead, but I am focused on my recovery." He has been part of ESPN as an NFL draft day contributor and a year-round draft analyst since 2021.
KOAM is in Galena, Kansas.
Okay. Huh. Yeah, look him up. You'll definitely recognize the face if you don't recognize the name. 913-586-7798 if you want to text in your questions now. We have been waiting for such a long time to get somebody from the Kansas City Diamonds on the program, and we wanted to do it last week, but that was their homestand.
They were busy winning games.
They were busy winning games. They took the Florida team 3-1. 3-1, and almost sold out that first game. So we are super excited about the Kansas City Diamonds. Where do they play? How can you watch? How did this whole thing come about? We're going to talk about all of that straight ahead on Dana and Parks. And again, if you have questions, you can text them in to Sam at 913-586-7798. I'm going to go get our guest, Sam. We will be right back with much more on Dana and Parks right after this.
Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at KMBZ.com.